This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Obsidio, The Illuminae Files, Part 3, by Amy Kaufman and Jay Kristoff. Read for you by a full cast. United Terran Authority, UTA Tribunal Transcript, Carenza Trials, Day 97. Chief Prosecutor, Gabriel Crowhurst. Chief Defense Counsel, Kin Hebi. Tribunal, Hua Li Jun. Saladin Al-Nakat. Chanel Jillian Chua. Witness, Leanne Frobisher, Director of Acquisitions, Baytech Industries. Date, 11:04:76. Timestamp, 13:06 hours. Continued from page 1172.
Perhaps we should get proceedings underway. Miss Donnelly, is the video feed operating at your end?
We can see you, Mr. Crowhurst.
Thank you for making yourself available to us today. Please state your name and occupation for the record.
Hannah Alima Donnelly. I don't really have an occupation. My father was Charles Donnelly, commander of Jump Station Heimdall.
Al-Nakat, S. Miss Donnelly, the tribunal must again remind you that remote testimony is a privilege, not a right. One can't help but notice your so-called Illuminae group has a flair for the dramatic. Should these proceedings devolve into melodrama or farce, I will not hesitate to suspend the session. Do you understand?
We understand, Your Honor.
Miss Donnelly, you've already been sworn in. Do you understand the penalties for providing fraudulent testimony to a United Terran Authority tribunal?
I'm sure Dr. Frobisher's lawyers can explain it to me. Pretty certain they would have warned her before she got on the witness stand for her comedy routine.
Heavy K. Objection.
Hello, Leanne. Nice suit. Athene original, am I right?
Your honors.
Miss Donnelly, these are exactly the kind of theatrics I will not tolerate. You will address the tribunal members or counsel only, or we will find you in contempt. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, Your Honor, Crystal.
Miss Donnelly, the tribunal has already covered the first and second segments of the Illuminae files, addressing the initial invasion of Carenza IV by Baytech Industries.
Objection! Alleged invasion.
Chua S. Sustained.
Apologies. Alleged invasion. We've reviewed records of the battle between the Lincoln and the Alexander. From there, we moved on to the alleged siege of Jump Station Heimdall by Baytech Special Operatives, and the arrival of WUC science vessel Hypatia.
Don't forget the universe almost imploding. Twice.
Quite. And yet you still haven't explained how you're talking to us now. Jump Station Heimdall was destroyed. If, as you claim, you and Heimdall's remaining population traveled to the Carenza system before the station's destruction, using the ship belonging to Travis Fork, the Mao, you would have been trapped there with the crew of the Hypatia, with no way of returning to the core. With the wormhole down, you wouldn't even be able to transmit to us.
10 points.
So where are you right now, Miss Donnelly?
I'm not at liberty to say.
But you're not in the Carenza system?
That'd be impossible. The Illuminae group saved 2 universes from annihilation and a hyperspatial paradox event, but we're not miracle workers.
Jun H. Miss Donnelly, please answer the question.
Sorry, no. The answer is no. We're not in Carenza.
Very well. So given that it should have been a trip of several thousand years back to the core without jump travel, would you care to explain to the tribunal how it is you and your colleagues escaped the system?
Not all of us did.
I beg your pardon.
Not all of us escaped Carinza, Mr. Crowhurst.
Are you saying some of your group are still there?
I'm saying they'll never leave. That's the point of all this. That's why we're here today. To tell the story for everyone who can't tell you themselves. To shine a light, to speak for the dead, Mr. Crowhurst. The dead, Dr. Frobisher.
Miss Donnelly, I will not warn you again.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Miss Donnelly, perhaps we can start at the beginning. Given your predicament after Heimdall's demolition, how did you escape the Carenza system?
That's a long story, and it includes some people you haven't met yet. See, what we didn't know at the time, what nobody knew until after Heimdall Station was destroyed, was that there were still survivors on Carenza 4.
Order! Order in the court!
I'm sorry, Miss Donnelly. Survivors?
Think about it. Four dreadnoughts attacked the planet in the initial invasion, along with mobile jump platform Magellan. The Alexander crippled Magellan, so nobody could jump out of the system, but only two dreads were actually destroyed. The others were still in orbit around Carenza 4, with no way to get home.
So there was a Baytech force on the planet?
Correct. By the time Hypatia reached the Heimdall waypoint, the occupying force had been stranded planetside for almost 7 months, along with a bunch of colonists who never made it out on the Alexander fleet.
But wouldn't these dreadnoughts and their Baytech crew have been able to transmit a message to Rapier, the Baytech operative on Heimdall? Baytech would have known these survivors were there, surely.
This is a little complex to explain. Fortunately, we just happen to have assembled a file on the topic.
Of course you have.
No need to be snippy, Leanne. Is everyone sitting comfortably? Anyone need to go to the bathroom before...
Miss Donnelly?
Okay, if you can open your readers to page 1. Once upon a time, on a little speck of ice at the end of the universe known as Carenza 4...
Briefing note. First relevant document found among recovered Baytech files regarding our new hero, Reese Lindstrom.
Baytech Industries Assault Fleet Carenza, Flagship Churchill. Personnel Transfer Directive, Priority 1. Authorization soon, 7802 BTN. Incept, 08-1675. Name, Lindstrom, Reese. Rank, Specialist. Current assignment, Electronics Support, Mobile Jump Platform, Magellan. New assignment, Electronics Repair and Logistics, Planet Carenza 4.
Specialist Lindstrom, happy belated Terra Day, and allow me to apologize in advance for what may be an unwelcome assignment. I understand you've done sterling work aboard Mobile Jump Platform Magellan while in orbit around Carenza 4, and assisted ably in the containment of the warp storm spilling from Magellan's damaged Hermium containment system. Your supervisors speak highly of your skills and dedication to Baytech Industries and the Orbital Corps. Unfortunately, unexpected difficulties have arisen at the Carenza 4 beachhead, resulting in a shortfall of technical staff. Therefore, you are hereby ordered to report to First Lieutenant Christie, Delta Company 4th Platoon. You will accompany 4th Platoon on their next rotation down on the Carenza 4 colony, commencing 08-1775. Understand, this is not a punishment, Specialist. You have done exemplary work, and the situation planetside demands the presence of our very best and brightest. With the warp storm contained and communication with our personnel aboard Jump Station Heimdall now possible, I have no doubt command will relieve us soon. Should communication with Baytech HQ prove fruitless, TechEng informs me Magellan will be capable of jump travel in 2 weeks. However, due to the containment breach, Magellan's Hermium stores are almost entirely depleted. As a result, safeguarding production in the Carenza Hermium mine is now priority 1. Lieutenant Christie will brief you fully aboard Flagship Churchill and assign you a protection detail for the duration of your stay on Carenza 4. I have every faith you will perform your duties with customary excellence and help ensure our final victory. Sun Huojin, Admiral Baytek Industries Orbital Corps. Commander, Churchill. Assault Fleet Carenza.
Oh, fuck me.
Briefing note. These logs were lifted from a low-tech chat client set up on Carenza IV's redundant high school administration server system by a local insurgency. Such as it was.
Carenza IV, McCaffrey Tech High School. Incept 08-1775. 08-46 hours.
Guest 17. You there?
Guest 3. Yeah?
Set to go?
What are you, my f***ing mother?
This is serious, goddammit.
Glad you're here to tell me these things.
Just don't f*** it up. Gonna hear enough sh** from the others about this without it being a fail, too.
Is there a meet?
Yeah, 1500 hours at shift break.
Waste of time. All talk, no walk.
Not anymore. Sick of this shit is you. You sure you're good to go?
Just sit back and watch the fireworks. And relax, for fuck's sake. You'll live longer.
You know none of us are going to live through this.
Maybe not. But we'll live longer than these Baytek assholes, at least. They can keep our seats warm in hell.
Briefing note. Transcript of Atlas-mounted camera footage recovered from Baytek servers on the planet Carenza IV. Dated 08-1775. Original footage is also included in this file. You should be used to the colorful language from our vidtex by now, but be warned. Curse words incoming.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 72130089.
Footage begins with an audio track only. There's a hiss of static as systems come online, the bass drone of engines rumbling over the tremors of atmospheric re-entry, and snatches of soft conversation. So I said to her, "Fem, I didn't see your name on him, and if you can't keep only been 3 weeks since our last rotation, chum, this is bull." Frostbite. Lost both hands and his nose if you... Insurgency my art. A flicker of snow rolls across my screens as the feeds fade into view. We're in the belly of a Baytek Locust, a surface-to-orbit shuttle built for heavy lifting during planet-side incursions. The surfaces are gunmetal grey, lit by strips of scuffed red fluorescence. A wall of monitors dances with data. The ship's a military transport, armoured and armed for business. On the rear bay doors, beneath the Phoenix logo of Baytek Industries, three words are spray-painted in neat stenciled letters. The holy trinity of every core grunt's life. Company, commander, core. The Locust's belly is filled with soldiers, orbital infantry, aka ground pounders, trained for atmo-to-surface seizure operations. 2 dozen men and women, most in their early 20s, each busy encasing themselves in the sleek lines of an armoured tactical light assault suit's plasteel and ballistics-grade nanofiber weave, painted in the white and grey of winter camouflage. They look like a cross between praying mantises and knights from the archive vids, except Sir Lancelot never carried a gun big enough to kill a building with. Every Atlas is fitted with a shoulder-mounted personal cam. The footage quality from their feeds is good. Audio is excellent. I'll say one thing for Baytek. When they plan an illegal planetary invasion / genocide, they don't spare any expense. One soldier stands out in the crowd, quiet amid the familiar banter. He's younger than the rest, 18, maybe 19. His Atlas is showroom new, no dings or scuffs or scars. None of the hand-drawn decorations that distinguish one pounder's faceless suit from another. He has a square jaw, sharp grey eyes, just a touch too wide. Sandy blonde hair, styled into a quiff that, if it doesn't violate regulations, damn well should. It sure as sh** violates the laws of gravity. One of my fellow vid-analysts, who insists on peering over my shoulder as I work, says she would hit that like it owed her all the ish in the verse. The name Lindstrom Rees is stenciled on his breastplate. Pretty as the kid might be, when his fellow soldiers look at him at all, they do it with narrowed eyes. "Fucking cherry," one sneers. "Green as grass. He old enough to have turf on the pitch, you think? Ask your sister. Hey, fuck you, Oshiro. Say please, lover boy." Lindstrom Rees stays silent during the exchange, frowning at the power couplings on his atlas. He practically has an "I have never worn one of these before" sign flashing over his head, but none of his squaddies offer to help with the rig. "Ten hut, officer on deck!" Lindstrom and his fellow soldiers snap to attention as an armoured figure stalks into the bay, boots thudding on temperfoam floors. He's built like a tank, not wearing his helmet yet. Dark eyes and short salt-and-pepper hair. Taimoko tattooed on one half of a grizzled face. The name Christie is stenciled on the battered breastplate next to his lieutenant's pips. The words, "I am your god now," are neatly handwritten above it. He surveys his troops, appraising each in turn. "At ease." The soldiers relax slightly, feet apart, hands behind backs. "Good morning, Pounders." "Morning, sir," come two dozen barks. "I know we had no time for a full briefing before dusting off from the Churchill. Apologies for interrupting your beauty sleep. Fuck knows Wozniak could use some more." A hulking soldier with a face like a dropped pie grins wide as the lieutenant smirks in his direction. The name Wozniak is printed on his breastplate, but he scribbled it out and written Duke above it. His scars are numerous, fresh, and, given the nanotech a frontline Baytech unit is packing, probably left there by request. "I'm also aware we had four more souls before our next Carenza rotation was due to commence," Lieutenant Christie continues. "So skipping the foreplay, here's the sit rep. At 23:47 hours last night, Carenza 4 time, a malfunction occurred in the internal environment system of the Carenza Town Hall, which had been refitted as our officers' barracks. As a result, the system began pumping pure CO into the hall. By the time the system fault was discovered, 37 of our officers were dead of carbon monoxide poisoning." "Fuck me," Wozniak whispers. "Goddamn rebs," another mutters. The locust bucks in the turbulence. Christie raises his voice over the rising murmurs. "I know what you're thinking, but it's possible the fault wasn't the result of sabotage. Even so, Admiral Soon is upping planetside presence. Until further notice, all rotations run 6 weeks surface, 2 weeks orbit. So I hope you packed your mittens, Fems and Chums, because we're in for a stay, and it's cold down there." The mood of the troops darkens along with the cabin lighting. "Questions?" Christie asks. A soldier with dark hair and a cheek full of chewing tobacco raises a hand. "I got a question. It's not the one about where babies come from, is it, Private Day?" The soldier grins, shifts his chaw from one cheek to the other. "Why don't we just line these damn pit diggers up against the wall and X the fucking lot of them, Top?" "Well now. That's a wonderful plan, Private," Christie nods. "And I suppose you're going to operate the Hermium processors when the civvies are all sixed? Got an engineering degree in between combat tours and fucking your cousins, did you? So X their kids instead," the Private insists. "That'll teach the Rebs to fuck with us." "The fact we have the miners' families under lock and key is the only thing keeping the Hermium outfit operational," Christie growls. "We X them, the mine shuts down, and we got no juice for Magellan. The official party line is still that there is no insurgency among the populace. So unstrap your head from your ass and leave the thinking for the logistics department." Day's face sours, but he shuts up. Christie raises an eyebrow, waiting for any more inquiries. In the silence, A slender woman with bobbed black hair nods at the boy. Who's the cherry, LT? This is Specialist Lindstrom, Lieutenant Christie slaps the blonde kid heavy on the shoulder. Electronics tech on loan from the Magellan. He'll be overseeing systems maintenance in the Carenza colony until further notice. What happened to Albretto, or Ingram and Cousins? They were in the barracks when Dr. Monoxide paid a visit. They're deep six. And this kid is their replacement. The woman glances at Lindstrom in disbelief. What is he, 12? He can't even put on a fucking atlas, LT. Well, thank you for volunteering to help him, Sergeant Oshiro. The ink on Christie's face twists with his humourless smile. Since you're so concerned, you'll be the specialist's shadow until further notice. And as you're nice enough to point out, we're short-handed on tech heads. So if anything happens to him, it's your arse in my line of fire. Understood? The woman blinks, jaw tightening. Sir, yes, sir. The locust's internal PA crackles. Top, this is Con. 5 minutes to surface, over. All right, Pounders, Christie roars. You heard the lady. 5 minutes to powder. Temperature is 6 below, wind at 80 clicks, so don't forget your booties. If a single one of you tubes even thinks about Xing out on this rotation, I will personally haul myself down into hell just to kick your sorry arse. Is that understood? Sir, yes, sir. I can't hear you. Sir, yes, sir. Your lives belong to Baytech, and your arses belong to me. A pounder does not die unless they are given permission to die. Is that understood? Sir, yes, sir. I can't fucking hear you. Sir, yes, sir. Christie points to the Baytech logo and motto painted on the hangar doors. Company, Commander, Corps. Corps, hoo-ah! 24 fists slam onto 24 breastplates. Lindstrom's is only a little off the pace. Christie surveys his troops one more time before nodding. Out-f***ing standing, as you were. Without another word, the lieutenant turns and stalks back the way he came. The soldiers set about finishing their prep, weapons check, temperature regulators, signal strength. 6.5 months into their occupation of the WUC's little Hermium outfit, they're a well-oiled machine. All the parts meshing except one. Lindstrom is still struggling with his suit when he looks up to find Sergeant Oshiro standing in front of him, hands on hips. This close, I can see through Lindstrom's cam that she's not much older than he is. Japanese descent, slice of Euroblock in there somewhere, hard brown eyes, pretty in a do-not-f-with-me kind of way. The words thou shalt not kill, the not crossed out, are printed on her breastplate. She's almost a foot shorter than he is, but somehow seems to tower over him. How many times you worn an atlas, Cherry? Just in training, ma'am. After watching him struggle a moment longer, glancing up at that ridiculous quiff, she slaps the kid's hands away. Watch. Learn. She runs him through the routine, methodical, checking to make sure he's paying attention. The locust rocks hard as it hits turbulence, and Lindstrom stumbles. Oshiro barely moves. When she's done, the sergeant raises an eyebrow at the kid. Got it? I think so. You better do more than think so. Carenza hits 70 below once the sun goes down. You flub your seal integrity and step outside into that, you'll be frostbitten before you feel the sting. The kid blinks. You're kidding, right? Oshiro turns to another pounder, the scarred one. Hey, Duke, you remember Stoll?
Shh, yeah.
The big man shudders theatrically. I still have nightmares. Why? The kid glances between them. What happened? The man called Duke grimaces. Temp regulator in her atlas blue on midnight patrol. She was half frozen by the time she got back to the OC. They took off her suit, and most of her skin came with it. The kid swallows. Wordlessly, he sets about copycatting Oshiro's routine to seal his suit, as Duke winks at a few of his comrades. To his credit, Lindstrom seems a quick study. He only fumbles once getting himself sorted. Good, Oshiro nods. Lindstrom flashes the sergeant a lady-killer smile. Thanks. Save it, pretty boy, she sighs. You can thank me legit by not getting your stupid ass X'd out before Christy takes me off babysitting duty. Lindstrom's lady-killer smile dies. He's not used to it failing by the look. What's the big deal? We're just standing guard over a bunch of colonists, right? Guffaws echo around the troop bay. The PA warns the Pounders they're 2 minutes from surface. Engines roar hard as the Locust slows its descent. The whole ship is bucking like it's in an earthquake. Oshiro is smiling at the kid, hard and sharp. You silver spooners on the Magellan don't get much word about what goes down on the surface, do you? We've been a little busy up there, the kid snaps. You know, fixing a breach in the vortex containment system, trying to stop a cascading warp storm from swallowing the entire planet, get some comms out, maybe get the wormhole generator running one of these years so we can jump the fuck out of here. It was a little complicated. That's so. Oshiro tilts her head. Well, down here it's real simple, Cherry. You do what I say, when I say it. You step where I step. You move when I move. Clear? I think I'll manage. The kid stares defiantly. It's not like we're going into battle here. Oh, maybe not a knock-'em-down, shoot-'em-up, Oshiro nods. But you bet your arse there's folks down there gunning for you. And these pit diggers aren't gonna do anything as stupid as shoot at you when we've got their families locked up. But they will fuck with you. Maybe it's just the water being cold every time you hit the showers, or a fistful of sugar in your cheetah's gas tank. Then maybe one night you head out on patrol, and the temperature regulator in your atlas crops out. Or your brake lines fail. Or maybe you just go to sleep with the heater running, and never wake up. Oshiro steps closer. Eyes narrowed. We invaded these people's homes, Cherry. Bombed them to shit. Killed their families. You think this isn't a battle? This is a fucking war. Lindstrom remains mute. Oshiro searches his eyes. Her voice is razor-edged. You do what I say, when I say it, she repeats. You step where I step. You move when I move. Clear? Lieutenant Christie reappears at the hatchway, helmet on, 8 telescopic lenses arranged like a cluster of glowing spider eyes in its forehead. All right, Pounders, 60 seconds, lock and drop. Oshiro is still staring at Lindstrom, waiting for an answer. The kid finally nods. Ma'am, yes, ma'am. Get your helmet on. Sullen, the kid slaps his helmet down. The arachnid optics flickering into a steady red glow. Magnetic couplings lock each soldier in place as the engine roar grows close to deafening. Metal shuddering, rivets groaning, the heavy hiss of hydraulics underscoring it all. There's one final tremor, then a brief silence, followed by a series of heavy thuds as the Locust touches down. The bay doors crack wide, admitting a howl of freezing wind, a bright flare of blinding snow-white light. Temperature in the bay plummets, frost and snow filling the air. The cameras take a moment to adjust to the glare. By the time vision returns, the Pounders have bailed out of the transport and gathered in the shadow of one broad prehensile wing. Lindstrom is sticking close to Oshiro as ordered, staring at the scene around him. The landing zone is as makeshift as everything else in the Carenza IV colony. Baytech had repurposed the old high school G-ball field to serve as their airfield. It was the only space large enough with a solid surface after the spaceport was destroyed in their initial invasion. If the poor saps had known they were going to be stuck living in it for half a year or more, maybe they wouldn't have bombed the shit out of the colony quite so thoroughly. Someone get me a tissue. Sitting by the landing pad in neat piles are 37 aluminum boxes. Each one is about 2 meters in length, rectangular, embossed with the Baytech Industries logo. You can see the shift in Lindstrom's stance as he realizes what they are. Coffins. Coffins filled with dead Baytech officers. A tanker trundles in on fat rubber treads to refuel the Locust. Spanner monkeys in thermal suits swarming around the ship as its flanks steam in the freezing air. Private Duke Wozniak, standing beside Lindstrom, nudges the kid with one elbow. Don't let Oshiro get you down, Rook. She's pro. Stick to her. She'll do you right. Sure, the kid says, still staring at those aluminum caskets. You get the chance, swing by the barracks tonight. 2100. The Duke's got a card game running. Jacks and knives. You got money, don't you?
Yeah.
Right. The big man nods. 2100. Don't tell Christie. Lieutenant Christie is barking orders, telling most of his troops to report to the operations center. He turns to the kid, yelling over the engines and howling gale, voice distorted by his suit. Lindstrom, enviro regulator at the med center is broke, dick. You and Oshiro haul art up the hill and get it copacetic. Then report back to the OC for dick. The explosion cuts Christie's sentence off at the knees. It's bright, deafening. The Atlas A-Viz rigs are built to withstand combat-level stress, though, so I get to watch most of it. It begins in the fuel tanker hitched to the Locust, blossoms outward, impossibly quick, incinerating the spanner crew and ripping through the gathered soldiers, throwing them around like kids' toys. Lindstrom is hurled a good 20 feet, landing in a crumpled heap with Oshiro on top of him, smoking debris raining all around them as the boom echoes across the stadium. The sergeant rolls to her feet in an instant, an MX Flechette cannon slung off her back, the red beam of her laser targeting system cutting through the swirling black smoke. Shouts of alarm ring across the airfield. Sirens wail. Engines roar as the fire crews scramble. Blackened bodies are strewn across the snow. Lindstrom struggles to his feet, rifle in hand, shouting to Oshiro. What the fuck is going on? Stay down! Are we under attack? Stay down! The woman peers through the smoke, lenses shifting. The Baytech Locust is a hollow shell, twisted and burning. Pounders are pulling themselves to their feet, but at least a dozen charred and smoking bodies are scattered about the blast site. Medic! Comes the cry. Medic! Lindstrom staggers forward through the snow, Oshiro out in front. Shit! She breathes. Lieutenant Christie is on his knees, four other soldiers huddled around him. A fifth man is on his back, the breastplate of his Atlas torn open by a smoking chunk of Locust hull. The chest behind it is shredded, white bone showing through the carnage, blood steaming in the snow. Christie drags off the pounder's helmet to reveal the features of Private Jared Day, twisted in pain, lump of chewing tobacco still lodged in his cheek. "Fucking bastards!" he groans. "Stow it, Private. Medic is on his way."
"It's bad, Top."
"Shut your noise, Day," Christie growls. "You're too stupid to know when to die." Day begins coughing, the chaw bubbling up out of his lips, blood and tobacco juice slicked on his chin. Looking over his shoulder toward the cluster of buildings at the airfield's edge, the lieutenant roars, "Where's the fucking medic?" Day is coughing harder, his face growing pale. Lindstrom and Oshiro are standing with the others now, the Locust still blazing behind them. A Baytech trooper with a green cross on his back comes sprinting through the sleet, skidding to his knees beside the groaning soldier. Christie has hold of Day's hand, pulling off his own helmet and looking into his man's eyes as the medic goes to work. "Look at me, Day," the lieutenant commands. Day is groaning, eyes closed. "Soldier, I said, look at me." The man opens his eyes a crack. Christy grasps either side of his head, leans in close. A pounder does not die unless he is given permission to die. You hear me, Private? Blood and chaw spatter Day's lips. The medic is cursing, sticky to the elbows. Red is soaking into the snow. Private Day, are you reading me? Christy roars again. I do not give you permission to die. Is that understood? Day winces, whispers something inaudible. I can't hear you. The wounded man hiccups, eyes growing wide. And, as he exhales, the light goes out of his eyes. Like someone flicked off the switch. 220 pounds of muscle and bone, encased in a shell of plasteel and ballistics-grade nanofiber weave, armed to the teeth, trained to perfection. And just like that, he's gone. Silence reigns across the wind-blown field. Christy looks at the soldiers around him, the ground crew and medics and spanner monkeys, all of them silent. The lieutenant pushes himself to his feet with a soft whine of servos. The winter camo on his armour is splashed with red. He glances at the dead bodies around him, at least a dozen left lying in the explosion's wake. He spits into glittering scarlet snow. Tag 'em and bag 'em. Lindstrom glances at Oshiro, breathing hard. The woman's face is hidden behind her helmet. Her voice is like iron. Welcome to Carenza, Cherry.
Briefing note. Team Baytech isn't alone in wondering what just exploded. Time to meet Asha Grant, pharmacy intern, Bruno Way, plumber, Steph Park, mechanic, and Joran Corrales, mining engineer.
Carenza 4, McCaffrey Tech High School. Incept 08-1775, 09-17 hours.
Steph Park, what the f*** was that?
Bruno Way. Hello yourself.
F*** you, Bruno.
Hmm.
Asha Grant. Are you okay, Steph? You safe?
Joran Corrales. Calm down, everyone. What was what?
That f***ing explosion? Didn't you hear it?
We're pulling 18-hour shifts at the mine, Steph. You don't hear much when you're 5 clicks under the ice shelf and 20 clicks from the action.
Well, someone rigged a fuel tanker to pop. Do you know how close I was? An entire locust is gone. 13 dead. Asha, they're bringing the bodies your way.
Awesome. Just what I need this week. Another autopsy.
I thought we were going to communicate about this. Since when are we setting bombs at the airfield?
Gotta admit, when I heard that boom, I thought you set it off, Steph.
Me?
You work at the stadium. You've got access to the landing pads.
Look, I'm not saying blowing a few more of these bastards to hell isn't a good idea. I've been suggesting that for months now, but I'd have cleared it with you all first.
We don't even know if this was one of our people. Baytech's gear is 7 months in the snow now. Could have been a tech failure.
Right. Like that aircon failure that wasted 37 of their officers?
Let's look on the bright side. We're all okay. And that happy little accident in the town hall took most of their tech specialists with it, you know?
My point exactly. Too good to be true.
Maybe we deserve a little good luck.
Luck my ass. They'll just bring down more tech heads from Magellan to replace the ones they lost.
They're gonna run out of them sooner or later.
So if it wasn't an accident, is this someone in the Resistance going rogue, you think? Someone from the mine, maybe?
No way. My guys are solid. Nobody down here is risking anything this stupid. Our families are on the line. I've got a wife and daughter locked up in Complex C, and bullshit like this risks everyone's safety.
We don't all have families held hostage, Joran.
Hey, everyone, breathe. Joran, of course we take the hostages seriously. We all have people we miss. I think about Jenna every day.
Not everybody had their loved ones get out on the evac fleet either, Bruno.
Steph, Hans wouldn't have wanted you to throw your life away. You know that.
And I didn't. That explosion wasn't me. But we all know damn well they're going to shoot every one of us sooner or later.
It might end up being sooner than we think. Just heard from Monty. The warp storm has apparently dispersed enough for them to get stellar comms back online. We think Baytech got a message out.
We have to find out what it said. Hell, we have to find out if anybody received it.
Yes, but how?
If they got in touch with BTHQ, we're screwed. I mean, even at light speed, it'll take a while for the message to reach the Heimdall gate and get out into the core. But sooner or later, we're into the final countdown.
We may be anyway. They're pushing us hard in the mine. I think they're getting close to the quota of hermium they need.
They must be close to getting the Magellan's jump gate generator functioning. As soon as they have enough hermium to jump the system, it's curtains for us.
We don't know that. They keep saying they're going to evac everybody.
And you believe that? After what they've done?
It's not impossible. I mean, who are we going to complain to about what they did? The UTA? Excuse me, but Baytech came and f***ed me while I was busy illegally mining hermium, but their lawbreaking was worse than mine. They know we won't tell anyone, so yes, I believe it's at least possible.
I have to go soon. My dead people will be incoming.
We have to find out who's setting these bombs.
Forget the bombs. We need to know what was in that transmission.
We've got no access to their comms array.
This is exactly why we need to take more direct action. Stealth hit the comm station, plus find out direct.
No, it's too risky. Our families are on the line, dammit.
And where do you think they'll be when the Magellan is ready to jump, Joran? Against the f***ing wall, that's where.
Let's not talk like that, okay?
We're no good to anyone dead.
And what good are we if all we do is sit around and chat?
We have to be cautious.
You and your caution can get f***ed, Joran.
Steph Park has left the conversation.
God damn it. Break is over. I have to go. Keep your ears open and keep calm, for Christ's sakes. We'll talk soon.
Joran Corrales has left the conversation.
Okay, that went well.
Better than last meet. Bruno, you think Steph did it?
The airfield bomb? I honestly don't know. I mean, I understand how she feels. She watched her husband die. She thinks she has nothing left to lose.
We all have something left to lose.
I know. That's why I fight every day. We have to, for hostages here and the people we love who got away. Jenna and I are going to be together again. I know it.
I hope so, Bruno. I really do.
Are you okay, Ash?
I have a dozen dead people incoming. My boss had the crap beat out of him by a BT officer yesterday, and I... Yeah. Yeah, I'm okay. You?
I'm okay. Man, this is a long way from high school, huh? Remember when the biggest prob you had was me throwing stuff at the back of your head in class?
Bruno, I have to go.
Aw, come on, I outgrew throwing shit around when the planet got bombed.
Ha. Not that. I need a minute to pull it together before they bring in the corpsicles.
Okay. Take care, my friend.
You too.
Bruno Wei has left the conversation. Asha Grant has left the conversation.
Briefing note. Video files lifted from Asha Grant's personal poem pad.
Video journal transcription prepared by Analyst ID 72130089.
The video starts with a wash of snow that clears to reveal the face of Asha Grant. She's half lit by the screen, and the dark shapes behind her sharpen into mops and brooms as the camera of her palm pad finds focus. She's in a supply closet, switching from an online conversation to a video recording. Her dark hair's pulled back in a ponytail, and her light brown skin is washed a greenish shade by the glow of the palm pad she's using to record. Twin white reflections of her screen show in her green eyes. She's chewing on her lower lip, fingers drumming against her temple as she considers her opening words.
Hey, Katie.
Her voice is hoarse with tiredness, and she clears her throat, then continues, softer.
Miss you, cuz. Just need to talk to you for a minute before I go out there and face it all. It's funny. It doesn't matter at all that these recordings just live here on my palm pad, that I don't send them anywhere. It still feels like talking to you. I keep these files behind the encryptions you set up for me, and in a way, that feels like you guarding me, keeping me safe. locking up my secrets for me where nobody can find them.
She sighs, tipping her head sideways to rest it against a broom handle.
This is f***ed, Cades. There was an explosion at the landing pads, and a bunch of BT troops are dead. And if anyone puts a foot wrong the next day or two, a bunch of us will be dead in retaliation. A bunch more of us, I mean. It has to be someone in the resistance who did it. The coincidence of this, and the deaths in the barracks, too much.
Her lips curve into a tired smile as she reaches out to adjust the palm pad, framing her face more squarely.
My boss, Morton, got the crap beat out of him yesterday. Long story short, he got into another argument with the head of the Baytech med team and ended up with a broken nose, broken ribs, and a fractured eye socket. I told him, Cates. I fucking told him. I said, Baytech are the ones with the guns around here. Baytech giveth, and Baytech taketh away. Right now, they're letting us use the facilities to treat our people, as long as we help their medical team with theirs. But they can take away our access anytime they like, which is exactly the damn point they're making locking him up. And still, he doesn't...
She trails off, scrunching up her face, then letting her expression slacken.
Let's just say,
she continues, quieter,
that I'm glad I didn't let him in on any of the resistance channels. We've got enough problems with our loose cannon already. Then again, once BT have enough hermium to jump the Magellan out of here, we'll be dead anyway, and Morton's ribs will be the least of his problems.
She rests her head against the broom handle again, sighs.
What's it like to be dead, Katie?
There's a tired smile for the question, and a pause as she leans past the palm pad to retrieve a water bottle.
I mean, I assume you're dead. I heard you made it onto one of the ships, but one of them got blown up right overhead, and the others had that huge Baytech dreadnought after them, so it seems likely someone blew you to pieces already. But I like to imagine you're alive, sitting on the couch in my living room, all pink hair and boots on my coffee table, messaging Ezra and bitching to me about your parents and...
Her lips press together so hard they thin, turn pale, and still that doesn't hide the tremor. Her ponytail falls forward over her shoulder as her head drops, hands coming up to her face for nearly a minute. From outside the closet, there's the muffled noise of a loudspeaker, but she ignores it. Her eyes are bright when she looks up.
Anyway, I heard you made it onto one of the shuttles. So you're Schrodinger's Katie right now. That was this weird old Terran experiment where you put a cat in a box, and since you couldn't actually know if the cat was dead or alive from that point on, the cat was considered simultaneously both alive and dead, and presumably pissed off about being in a box. So right now, I choose to believe you're alive.
There's another noise, this one above her. It's a softer scrape, and where she ignored the loudspeaker, now she freezes, looking up.
Katya, what are you doing up there?
She finally whispers.
Asha, I'm hungry.
A second whisper comes, younger, much younger. Grant digs around in the pocket of her scrubs to produce a snack bar. She reaches toward the ceiling, and when she sits again, her hand is empty.
I'll find some more for you tonight. I promise, baby girl.
She whispers.
Keep out of sight. You got it? Quiet as a mouse.
The cleverest mouse.
And the cleverest mouse never gets caught, does she?
She's way too clever.
Is the whispered reply from the invisible child, mumbled around a mouthful of snack bar. Then, with a scrape, she withdraws. Grant stares at her own reflection in the screen, features slackening into exhaustion now she's alone. Then she shakes her head, quick and sure, and tugs her scrub straight as if she's donning armor. Reaching forward, she switches off the camera.
Briefing note. Meanwhile, Specialist Reese Lindstrom is getting to know his new babysitter.
Surveillance footage summary prepared by Analyst ID 72130089.
This is a transcript of Atlas Cam footage and video taken from the Carenza Colony hospital server. The quality of the hospital cams is shit. The audio sounds like it was recorded in a toilet. I cannot work under these conditions. Wah! The ride to the hospital is taken mostly in silence. Specialist Lindstrom and Sergeant Oshiro bundle themselves into the back of an armored personnel carrier, along with the dead bodies of 13 Baytek soldiers and spanner monkeys. Aside from Oshiro notifying the hospital that they're inbound, neither she or Lindstrom speaks much. Some of the corpses are still smoking. There weren't enough body bags for them all. The stink in the APC must be ungodly, but the pair are sealed inside their Atlas armor, so they're spared the smell of freshly barbecued pounder. "Sorry about your friends," Lindstrom finally says. Oshiro glances at the lumps of cooling meat that used to be her squaddies. "Shut up, Cherry," she sighs. "Do you want to talk about it?" "No, Cherry, I want you to shut up." A few minutes pass. No sound except for the sound of tires crunching on snow. "Oshiro? Jesus, what? Why are we taking corpses to a hospital?" The woman sighs again, the sound rasping through her suit's vox unit. "Morgue facilities," she says at last. "All Baytek personnel killed in the line of duty need to be autopsied before transport to the Churchill. The Admiral's a stickler for procedure. This place had an experimental bioweapon dropped on it in January, remember? Soon doesn't want trace components getting aboard the fleet. Can you imagine what it might do if it got released inside a spaceship?" Unaware of what Baytek's bioweapon did evolve into when given a few months to mutate inside a floating metal can in space, Lindstrom simply shrugs. "I don't get it. It's not like we don't know how they died." "We don't make the rules, we follow them. They should have taught you that in basic." "I'm science division. They teach us to look at the world analytically, search for more efficient ways of doing things, you know, to think and stuff. Did they teach you how to shut up, because this'll be the third time I tell you to do it?" The kid sighs, doesn't say another word. The APC trundles over frozen roads, thumping into shrapnel potholes made by seven-month-old missile strikes. It's another 10 minutes before they pull to a halt. The hospital is all the way across town from the airfield. The bodies have stopped smoking by then. As they step out into the freezing air, we get our first look at what's left of the Carenza colony. The place was basically a big country town, built to accommodate about 18,000 people. Miners and engineers, their families, and all the folks needed to run the facilities that sprang up around the WUC's illegal Hermium op. Schools and shops, fuel stations and liquor stores, warehouses and apartment blocks and cineplexes, oh my! Now the place is a ghost town. Everything covered in snow. Freezing winds whipping through shattered buildings, the collapsed ruins of the spaceport. 3 gaping cracks run along the glacial shelf, cutting through the center of town. The only people in sight are Baytek troopers or colonists on special duty. The next shift of miners is being shuttled to work in a motley convoy of civilian vehicles, flanked by APCs. Baytek missiles collapsed the subway system during the initial invasion, so roads are the only way to get to the Hermium mine. The facility is just a blurred speck on the horizon. A small city of processing towers and pipes and concrete, a good 20 kilometers out of town. It's at minimum safe distance in case the shit hits the fan, as the near interdimensional disaster aboard Heimdall should have taught you. When you're dealing with exotic ultra-heavy elements and things go bad, they go bad all the way. 4 Baytek soldiers with VK burst rifles are waiting in the hospital parking bay, along with 2 colonists in orderly uniforms. Shivering in the chill, the civvies begin unloading the bodies onto waiting gurneys. Lindstrom moves to help a sad-looking woman with graying hair lift the biggest corpse. "Cherry, what are you doing?" Oshiro asks. Helping with the bodies. Is that your f***ing job? No, but Lieutenant Christie ordered you to fix the hospital enviro-regulator, did he not? Yeah? So, what usually happens next? Oshiro snaps her fingers a few times. Oh, damn it, I should remember this one. Help me out, specialist. I fix the hospital enviro-regulator? See, there you go. And here I was thinking all that time you spent in basic learning to think and stuff would have been better spent with a skin vid and a gym sock. Jesus. The sergeant tilts her head in the hospital's direction. Get the f*** inside before I freeze my Brittany off. With an apologetic shrug, Lindstrom slings his satchel of tools onto his shoulder and leaves the civvies to it. The orderlies keep loading the corpses under the watchful eyes of the four other Baytech goons. The knowledge that the bodies are all wearing BT uniforms doesn't seem like it's lost on anyone. Inside, the hospital looks like it's seen better days. Once white walls are now scuffed grey, the windows are cracked, and the lighting is flickering intermittently. The place is medium-sized, maybe 50 beds in total. Oshiro strides to the reception counter, removes her helmet with a whoosh of escaping air. A sharp black bob falls upon sharper cheeks, dark eyes, and unpainted lips. Lindstrom's ridiculous quiff has been squashed flat beneath his headgear, but as he removes his helmet, it somehow springs back to attention in defiance of all laws of physics. "Where is everyone?" he asks. There's not a soul in sight. Raised voices can be heard up the corridor, and a small blue globe is flashing above the reception area. As if in response to Lindstrom's query, a female voice spills across the hospital PA. "Dr. Sarah Wisner, report to room 24. Dr. Wisner, 24. "What's going on?" Lindstrom asks. "Code blue." Oshiro points to the flashing globe. "Someone's dying." The sergeant peers down the corridor, catches sight of a dishevelled nurse dashing across the hall. Glancing at Lindstrom, she holds up one armoured finger. "You wait here. I'm going to go ask directions to the enviro controls. I can take a look around what—" "No," Oshiro glares. "Something happens to you, Christie will chew me like I was a f***ing tennis ball." The kid squints. "The lieutenant chews tennis balls." "No, he..." "You know." Vague hand waving. "Like a dog. But I'm shitty at analogies, okay? Just shut up and stay here. That's an order." "Ma'am, yes ma'am." Oshiro stares a moment longer, as if daring the kid to move. He does his best impression of boy with feet glued to the floor, and the sergeant stalks off toward the babble of voices and electronic squeal of flatlining EKG in room 24. The door to the reception office opens with a creak. A girl in a rumpled hospital uniform emerges, a small speaker and mic hooked on her ear. She wears her long dark hair pulled back in a ponytail, her light brown skin washed paler by the endless snow outside the cracked windows. She looks three nights tired, frayed around the edges, but even that can't quite wear the pretty off. Her eyes are the colour of summer grass. "Third call, Dr. Wisner," she says, her voice crackling on the PA. "Please report to room 24 immediately. Dr. Wisner, room 24. Now, here's where it gets interesting, kids. I've watched this on slow-mo a dozen times, and I swear you can count 27 different expressions on Lindstrom's face in a 3-second period as he sees this girl. He actually does a double take, jaw dropping like a bag of bricks. Thing is, as the girl catches sight of him, she's on the same gobsmacked page, green eyes going wide. She puts her hand to her chest like it's about to burst. Her whisper crackles across the entire hospital PA. "Holy shit." The kid blinks, mouth flapping open and closed. Sheer dumbfounded shock slapped all over his face. "Asha," he breathes. Cherry! The kid flinches, startled. The girl, too.